We made this.
Everybody, Paul, stop it. Paul said gusset just before we went live, and then he's put me off. You're listening to We Buy Records. My name is Tim Scully, and I'm joined as ever by my co-host Paul Field.
Good evening, everyone.
And we're back. We had a little bit of a break, unintentional, because Paul was poorly, and I also was not able to do it. So, but we're back now. We're here. We're as professional as ever. So thank you for sticking with us. Paul, is there any housekeeping before we get into the news portion of the show?
There is. There's a little bit of housekeeping this week. You know, we were talking about what kind of records people buy, whether it would be predominantly new, predominantly secondhand. And you said...
Well, I thought that more, from experience in the shop, I thought more people buy new than you might think. And you guessed that it was probably 75%. People that listen to our show,
yep.
It's a good slice of the population, right?
Absolutely.
You know, the sort of weirdos that listen to our show, they're probably representative of some people. You thought that they would buy 75% used, 25% new.
Yeah.
And I thought it might be a bit higher than that.
And we got the results, and it was, I think, about 100 people took part in the poll, which is fair enough.
I think it was about 100, yeah.
74% buying used, 26% predominantly new.
So technically I was right.
By one percentage point. Yes, very good, Tim. You're claiming that, are you?
Maybe.
Okay.
But did you think fair enough, or did you still think it could have been lower, new?
I thought that was about right. So I thought about, you know, I am talking about our listeners, though.
I think normal people buy more new stuff. I do.
Yeah, okay.
If there's any normal people just joined us for the first time this week post poll, please do let us know if you buy more new records than used records, and help to prove me right.
Now, I rang you this week on Saturday. Do you remember?
You were very excited.
Excited isn't the word. Shocked, giggling, slightly perplexed.
Yes.
That, I think it was episode 3 or 4, you told the tale of how you went to see the largest collection of terrible records you've ever seen.
That's right.
Well, cut a short story even shorter. An ad was on the local neighbourhood app in Bexhill for records. I arranged to go and see them. It took quite a long time. He was away. But anyway, when I got round there, it was a house full of terrible records. And it took a little while for the realisation that, oh my God, this is the collection that Tim saw. And I said to him, Have you had anyone else round to look at this collection? And he goes, some bloke came round, tried to pick out bits, and I told him to fuck off.
Yeah, I mean, that's more or less what happened. The thing is, he was so, I don't remember, but in reality, he was so horrible that I didn't even get to the point of starting to talk about what we might be able to offer, because he was just so disgusting that we just said, you know what? We're just going to leave it. Thanks. So actually, either he was talking about me and he was trying to be more of a big I am than in reality, or there may have been multiple other dealers that have had a look and failed.
Yeah, I mean, I as soon as he said that, that was when I knew for certain.
But yeah, when you called and described it, it was definitely him.
Yeah.
From everything. I won't repeat the details in case anyone wants to break into his house and steal all of his...
Jim Reeves.
Yeah. I mean, so many records. And when you went, were they still like in the toilet?
Yeah,
in the,
everywhere. In every room, in bags. Yeah, I didn't see the stuff that you'd picked out, because I might have made a cheeky offer on it.
That's the thing, is there is about sort of 2 crates worth of pretty decent stuff. Not necessarily amazing stuff, but decent stuff. But you would have to buy a really big van's worth of shit records to get your hands on those. And the thing is, I think I said this in the episode that we talked about it sort of in depth. he won't ever sell them. He'll die, and
a
house clearance guy will come in, and his next of kin or whatever will pay the house clearance people to remove all these records. They will then perhaps go through them, flog them at a boot fair, sell the best ones. So someone else will profit eventually. And unfortunately, he's obsessively bought a mountain of shit records from which he'll never profit.
No.
Which is a bit sad. But
he was a really unpleasant individual. Yeah. I know he's old. Yeah. Okay.
And we don't say do we on this podcast.
No.
But he was.
And I will give old people an amazing amount of slack. I will let them get away with all sorts. But this guy was just right over the line. I just thought he was just not pleasant at all.
And so was he rude and aggressive to you from the off?
Not aggressive, rude. He was pleasant. It was just when I mentioned other stuff, and when other people who'd looked at them were mentioned, that's when he turned.
I would think that 5 years ago, he wouldn't have thought that this collection of rubbish is worth anything.
No, because vinyl's back.
Mm. And what I'm seeing now is this could be a whole other conversation, but I'm starting to see decent collections where people now don't want to be guided by what a buyer or dealer, you know, thinks they're worth to buy. They've got this crazy idea in their heads of what they're worth because they've done a tiny bit of Googling, or because they've bought the bloody record collector book. And it's making it harder, because you can't buy a collection to make your money back. That just isn't how it works.
A little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing.
Yeah, it really
game.
Is. And I'm a little bit scared that it's, you know, and this is me, by the way, as a like hilariously honest, straight dealer. That's me saying it. That's not people saying it. Oh, you can't make a profit anymore because I can't get pepper for a quid. And, you know, it's not that. It's, you know, I want to pay fair prices, but if people think that their sort of scratty record is worth 50 quid because the very first press mint copy on a really, really good day might sell for 50 quid, it doesn't make their record worth 50 quid that they're trying to sell to a dealer. It sucks, but it's
just the way it is. Yeah. Unfortunately, the people you need to get that message to are not listening to this podcast, Tim.
Fine. Should we move on then?
I've got one last bit of housekeeping.
Oh, yes, please.
By the time this airs, we'll have already had our show on Radio Free Matlock.
How did it go?
I'm hoping it went really well, because we'd had a drink and I've not heard it since. So it could be great, it could be terrible. Well, for us it will be tomorrow night we get to hear it, but it will be put onto Mixcloud so people can, if you want to hear some of the records,
if you want to hear this but with music as well.
Yes, basically it's this but with music. Basically us bickering.
We'll be putting a link on our Twitter. So you're going to have to, if you're not a Twitter user, you will, I'm afraid, have to.
Or just type in Radio Free Matlock.
Or type in Radio Free Matlock and you'll find their website.
Yeah, and thank you to everyone who has listened.
Thanks.
Should we do the news?
Yes. You've got the news this week, I think, Paul.
I do. Record Store Day. Now, in the States, they have a kind of Record Store Day Part 2, which takes place around Black Friday.
Yes,
that weekend.
And it's longer and it's got scenes in Italy in it, doesn't it?
Oh my God.
Is that right?
Then? What?
I'm sure that's right.
Right. Do you want to have a guess at anyone who's got a record coming out?
David Bowie.
I should have really ordered these alphabetically, shouldn't I? Do you know what? You might have to edit this because I don't think he has.
Don't tell me that the Bowie barrel is actually empty.
The Bowie barrel appears to be
empty.
So
who have they got?
Well, there's Sir Paul McCartney.
Hey, Macca, what's the Macca release?
The Macca release is Home Tonight in a Hurry. A 7-inch, a limited of 12,000 copies.
Hey.
So not limited at all. The Monkees.
Okay.
Who have got Christmas Party Plus. Don't know what that is. Willie Nelson. Like a bit of Willie Nelson. That's another 7-inch. There's a lot of toot here. Pearl Jam, The Pretenders, Lou Reed, Todd Rundgren, Joe Satriani. I mean, Slipknot, Bruce Springsteen, Steppenwolf. Are you mad for some Steppenwolf, Tim?
Yeah, they're all right. I quite like
a Steppenwolf. Steppenwolf, limited to 1,700 copies.
Classic.
U2, of course.
What's the U2?
Oh, I don't know. It is 3. It's a 12-inch on Ireland, limited to 7,000 copies.
and it's called Three. Is that just one played in succession?
Probably.
That was a joke.
Oh, very good.
One, it's three.
You've got a lot of other legacy stuff.
Do you know what I should have said? I should have said, is that one played over itself with two more? Basically, there's an eloquent way of getting that joke out, and I couldn't do it.
No. Bit of Alice Cooper, some Jeff Buckley.
Okay, it sounds all right.
The Doors.
Is there any Doof
Gun
Doof?
Club, there's no Doof Doof. There's one Madonna 12-inch, and that an Arcade Fire. But that's a 7-inch again. So there's not a lot. There's a lot of stuff. It's really pandering to a very kind of...
American heritage classic.
Yeah.
Classic rock.
Yeah.
And I think your knowledge is probably better than mine of the early days of Record Store Day. I think but your memory is better than mine in general. When first few years of Record Store Day releases, weren't they mostly more obscure and weird?
Yeah, it was a lot less commercial. The bigger labels didn't have BMG pumping out loads of stuff.
Possibly not at all.
I'm not even sure they did anything. Yeah, I think it was a lot of smaller acts.
It's funny, I'm just thinking if you were to compare that list with the list of the first couple of years of artists, it would probably be quite bizarre.
Well, this is slightly different anyway because it's the American spin-off extra Record Store Day Plus, if you like.
Mm.
But there's, I think, other than, I mean, Catherine might pick up the Madonna, but other than that, there is zero on there that I have any interest in.
So I wonder, do they tend to get imported to this country?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you saw a picture. Tom Berry, one of our listeners, was in Singapore recently.
Oh, yes, I did see the picture.
And
all of the Madonna 12-inches. It's
a huge stack. And I'm not sure that they were released there. I think they've just, I don't know if they've just ended up there. But there was a huge stack of them, all the same, all that La Isla Bonita,
and
faux Japanese.
Still full price as well, I know.
I think they've been reduced a bit, but yeah, so where Record Store Day stock goes to die is Singapore. I felt really sorry for him. Did you see how many shops were closed?
No, what, in Singapore?
He posted a picture of six in a row, shut. That's incredible.
Well, that slightly foreshadows something that you're going to be talking about later in the
podcast. Yes, we're going to be talking about Istanbul, which is not as bad as that, but it does suffer from similar...
Is vinyl dead, Paul?
It's not that vinyl's dead, Tim. It's that record shop owners, and this is peculiar just to record shop owners,
lazy
I find,
bastards,
open whenever they like.
They do, don't they?
And it is so infuriating. They must... How can you run a business and not grasp that people may come to your town and visit the record shops?
Because you're just doing it for fun for yourself, aren't you? You're not doing it for customers, that's why.
Just baffling. To find six on the bounce all shut. And then the one, I think the two that was open, one was full of Record Store Day Toot and the other one was full of jazz.
What's wrong with that?
Bloody
hell. We'll educate you yet, Paul. One day you'll be educated.
Yes. Do you want to talk about hot stampers?
More than anything else.
Well, should we just kind of, we'll do a little bit of blurb from the main vendor of hot stampers.
What's a hot stamper?
I'm glad you asked what a hot stamper is, Tim. Hot stampers are pressings with sound quality that goes far beyond that of the typical LP. Discovering these extraordinary records and making them available to the audiophile public is currently the main focus of our efforts here at... blank, blank, I'm not going to name the company. The term hot stampers derives from the metal parts called stampers, which press down and flatten the vinyl puck, which is placed in a record press, thereby producing a record. We also use the term hot stamper to refer to our favourite stamper numbers, also known as matrix numbers.
Our favourite. Does it really say our favourite stamper numbers?
Yep. These are simply the numbers you see etched into the dead wax of records.
What's your favourite stamper number?
I don't know my favourite. My favourite matrix number on a record.
I can't believe it actually says that.
We've compiled most of what we consider to be our best commentaries about hot stampers below. Those visiting the site for the first time are encouraged to read these for starters. The Book of Hot Stampers, The Four Pillars of Success, The Science of Hot Stamper Shootouts. Although it says four, there's only three.
But that's not true, is it?
That is absolutely true. That's what it... Tim, I'll hand Tim
the four pillars of success.
It's like some weird
cult. It's a front for a cult. The science of hot stamper shootouts. They've really written a thing called the Book of Hot Stampers.
This is like the intro to all the pages and pages and pages of their justification for the hot stamper.
So if they write enough, then it makes it seem like it's legit. Right?
Yeah, it's almost like they've almost like done Bible. A thesis. Yeah. What's kind of really puzzled me is how do they get their stock? Right, and there's a paragraph here. They're talking about Led Zepp 2.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. At least 80% of the copies we buy these days, for many hundreds of dollars each, I might add, go right back to the seller. So they're buying records secondhand online, having a look at them. If they don't fancy it as a hot stamper, sending it back for a refund? How is... What?
And this is their business
They
model.
Claim to look through hundreds of copies of the same record to find you the hot stamper. They sit around all day listening to these things to find the best one.
This isn't... What? This is not a real business.
This is a... You think I've got a joke? So as well as the hot stampers, they come in different grades. You have white hot stampers, red hot stampers, super hot stampers, nearly hot stampers.
And it's just about the general quality.
Yeah, so it could be an original pressing of something, but it might not be. Because when I've looked closely, quite often they don't mention the year. So it could be a fairly modern pressing. Now, for example, Led Zepp 2, a stunning... It doesn't say what year it is, okay? A stunning copy that is absolutely guaranteed to rock your world. Quadruple plus A star 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 on side one. And this grading for side two is nearly triple plus A star star two A star 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 on side two. This is freakishly good sound. We created a top 10 list just to put this album on it. With clean copies selling for up to £1,000 on eBay. That's not true. We're having to pay a fortune for the album these days. Not the quietest copy we've ever heard. They never are these days. But luckily...
It has surface noise.
Yes, but there's plenty of excellent loud music to obscure the noise. No inner groove distortion either. It's become a common deal-breaker for the records we buy on the internet. We get them in, we play that track, we hear it distort, and we pack the record up and send it back to the seller. Again, they're repeating this. We'll buy your records off you for hundreds of dollars and then send them back if we don't like them.
And then if they do like them, they'll sell them on.
Yes.
For...
Well, Tim.
Well, yeah, okay, sure.
I've randomly picked out some items, okay? This is a white hot stamper of The Beatles, a collection of Beatles oldies. It is A++++ kilo triple plus demo disc quality. A Discogs average selling price, £15. Mm-hmm. How much do you think they want for it?
I mean, we get this in all the time. Okay. And you know, we often get a near mint copy. So it was released, yeah, it's a mid-late 60s compilation of stuff when they'd moved out of their first pop phase into the second. It's a nice compilation, but it's not an album. It's just a compilation.
Yep.
So I guess they want £200 for it.
£200, okay. That's your. I'll give you all the answers at the end. There's only three. Cat Stevens,
yeah.
T for the Tillerman. Now, yeah. I found this very recently in Age Concern for Catherine's dad, and I paid £1.
Yeah, it's a classic album. You can, if it's absolutely lovely mint, that could be a 15 quid record. Yep. If not, it's a sort of 5 or 6, 7 quid
album. This is the
album.
Pink Rim Label Island pressing. It's the pinnacle of British folk rock from 1970, apparently, earning a shootout-winning triple plus A star 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 grade, or very close. Discogs average, £25. What do you think they want for Cat Stevens, Tim?
Let's go up a bit.
Okay.
£250.
£250, okay. And the last
one. Can I just ask, there were pluses and stars, right, in their grading? And different items will have different numbers of pluses and then different numbers of stars.
Yeah, it's all very confusing.
I'd like to see Mojo introduce this grading, this rating policy for the albums from now on. I think that would be really good. The new Coldplay album has got 3 stars, 4 pluses and 5 bags of popcorn.
Excellent.
That's what I like to see.
Are you familiar with the work of Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young?
Certainly am.
Are you a big fan of the album Deja Vu?
Yes, good album.
Excellent. Discogs average selling price, £7.48. A stunning shootout winning copy that is guaranteed to blow your mind. Each side
shootout again.
They do. They get hundreds of copies of the same album.
And this is the shootout
copy.
This
is the best sounding copy. Then they send all the others back. The sound is huge, lively, present and rich, and in a way that nothing you've heard can compete with. 5 stars. So, yeah, Discogs average £7.48. What would they like for their White Hot Stamper?
To be fair, a nice copy of that is worth more than £7.48.
Okay, so that must be quite a lot of
tatty copy. Yeah, no, I know. I'm just adding a bit of colour. Okay. That it is a good album. That's more like a really nice copy is at least £20.
Okay.
I'm going to go mad.
Okay.
£400.
Okay, £400. So I can tell you that the Beatles...
Yes.
You it's...
I guess 200.
$599, so about £550. The Cat Stevens album, $799, which is what?
About £700. £700.
The Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, $649. What's that? £580. And I've got one little more here because I did talk about it at the start. The Led Zeppelin 2.
Yes.
Now, because it doesn't say what pressing it is, it could be. So, how much is a random early, but you know,
yeah, a random
pressing,
early, but probably not a first.
Yeah,
could still
because
be like,
if it was a first, the others they mention it.
Yeah,
and now it's not mentioned.
It? Yeah,
so
but
go
it
on.
Could still it could certainly be like £35 or okay. a bit more.
How much do you think they want?
$1,000.
Yes, $999. Yeah.
So basically, right. So they buy a lot of records online. And out of the ones that they buy, the ones that look nicest, they mark up by, 200?
I don't understand. It makes
No, like 1,000%? Wait, my maths is not amazing.
It's but just ridiculous.
So that they buy 50 copies, they find the one that they think is the best, they put a load of pluses and stars on it, and they... What? I just don't get the business model.
If... Any of our listeners want to defend this? I did talk about this online, actually, and one guy did say, oh, no, I think they're quite good. But it was only one. Everyone else was like, leapt on it straight away and said, this is ridiculous.
Was he a Mr. H. Stamper? Was that what was his username, this guy who defended it?
What do you think of this, Tim? Your face is giving away a lot.
I think it's disgusting. I think it's absolutely bizarre and disgusting. Why should the fact that... If someone advertises a record as being near mint or mint on Discogs and you buy it and it is near mint and it's an early press and it sounds great. I don't need an interim company to buy that same supposedly near mint copy from that person on my behalf and then see if it meets their own standards and then they sell it on to me for 400 times the price. That doesn't make any sense to me. If I'm a record buyer, you know, I have the power to send it back as well. If it's not good enough, I can send it back for you know, an 80th of the price.
It's just bizarre. There are so many testimonials on there. They are hilarious. We would love someone to come on or write in defence of the Hot Stamper.
Would we?
Well, we would.
Yeah,
we'd make fun of them, obviously, yeah, but I'd
no,
still
I,
like
I
it.
Would like
no,
it.
I would. I think, like you know, because if there are people out there and they are doing it, they must, wouldn't you know, should we really be this judgmental? Yes, we should.
Yes, I
Excellent.
Think so too. Paul, from one kind of gimmicky bullshit to another.
Oh, no.
I wanted to talk to you about gimmick sleeves.
Oh, okay.
So gimmick in this... sense isn't a pejorative word. It doesn't mean stupid gimmick. It's just what you know. You might have seen it on Discogs that this version is the gimmick sleeve version. It'll say in italics by the title. It just means there's something quirky or special or unusual about the packaging of the record. I suppose it's my favourite subject. And it's record packaging, but this time it's the printed packaging that lives around the record or CD. So Tool, the sort of experimental metal band, a few months ago released their new album, Fear Inoculum. I presume you bought a copy?
No.
And the deluxe, it came as a deluxe limited edition CD, which had a digipack folding sleeve with a built-in screen.
Oh, I think we've talked about this before.
Featuring an exclusive animation and an exclusive piece of music. It sold out instantly and it's now yours for 70, 80 plus quid on Discogs. What I like about it is... they've put a little USB cable and a little plug on the side of the screen bit so that you can recharge it. Otherwise, it becomes a pointless piece of plastic very quickly. But, Paul, it's not the first time we've seen gimmick sleeves. ELO, for their album Out of the Blue, provided you with a fold-it-yourself cardboard spaceship. I can imagine you enjoying that. Pink Floyd, their album Pulse, had a little flashing LED light which flashed for a couple of years and then died. Spiritualized had their album, I think, Ladies and Gentlemen, We're Floating in Space, I think. There was a gimmick version that came as an oversized drug blister pack where, you know, when you pop out a pill, but instead you pop out the CD. So in order to actually listen to it, you had to sort of destroy the value of the thing and pierce that metal foil. There's loads more. Public Image Limited, theirs came, Metal Box by them came in a massive round metal tin. There's a, well, the Japanese, I mean, what I'm going to, what I'm building to is...
Is it you build into the Revolting Cocks? Because didn't they do one which was like full of jizz, basically?
I mean, that sounds like the kind of thing they would do. Mm. Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you if you had any favourites. You've already...
That's obviously, I've gone straight to the jizz.
you might like this one. Japanese noise artist Merzbow released a one-off limited edition car.
Oh, wow.
It had belonged to the owner of the label that put it out. And the police had told him to move his... This is true. The police had said, you're not using your car, it's not tax, you need to move it or we're going to tow it. So we thought, okay, I don't need it anymore. What I'll do is I'll modify the CD player so it only plays this Merzbow CD, and I'll rig it so that when you turn the car on, the CD player starts playing. So basically you cannot operate this car without hearing the Merzbow album. And he put it in there, and he put it up for sale as a limited edition of one. Unfortunately, Paul, it didn't sell.
Oh,
so that's, you know, but what do you reckon? Gimmick sleeves, do they add anything to the music, Paul?
No, not really. They are, right, can be fun
let's,
items.
Let's
no,
move
they
on
can
to the next
be
subject.
Fun. They can be fun, and they are a conversation piece. But personally, I'm not a fan, and purely for storage aesthetics, it's a bloody nightmare.
That's true. That's very true. I find it's very true for CD gimmicky CD sleeve packaging,
don't like them
because
either.
You've got your, you know, at least CDs are quite consistent on a shelf. I mean, I love what they call sort of LP replica sleeves, which you get for CDs, where it's a nice thick cardboard sleeve. It's slightly taller. It's about the same depth as a jewel case, but slightly taller because it's squared off. And the idea is that it's an exact loving replica of the cardboard vinyl sleeve experience that you would have got from the original record. And they're actually very nice. But if you've got a CD storage thing, which is the right height for CDs, then they don't fit in them.
Ah.
I'm surprised you don't know about those. They're really nice.
Yeah, I you know, I'm not a big CD person. I tend to
maybe
just pick
this
them would, up in...
this might change your mind.
No.
Any listeners, I'm curious to know if any of you know what I'm on about, and if so, if you're a fan of the replica. I think if CDs from day one had come in this packaging, I think that people might be less kind of... It's the plasticiness of the jewel case, I think, does a massive... And the fact that, the tabs break off and the little spindles that hold it break off, I think that everything about it is so ugly. But I wonder...
I'd be interested to see if any listeners have got any weird or wacky packaging.
I bet they do.
And post some pictures,
because I'd really
like to see that. Yeah. They must do.
I bet they do.
I
think there was a
really weird...
That's true. There was a record that came... I think the outside of it was sandpaper, so that it damaged... Whatever records were either side of it in your collection would be damaged by it. I reckon it was like a rock band or something, but you know.
It's sort of good, isn't it? It's wanky, but also quite good.
Yeah, I one came in a few weeks ago that was a CD in a little sort of plastic sleeve that was just glued to a big piece of wood.
Even better.
And there was no packaging. There was no. It was just a CD in a little sleeve on a bit of wood.
Perfect.
Bosh. That's it, really. I mean, you know, not a lot to say, but I wanted to raise the idea of gimmick sleeves, and if anyone has any thoughts, please do let us know. So yeah, watch this space for Gimmick Sleeves Part 2. You've been on your holidays, Paul.
Yeah, I've been on a little record hunting trip around Istanbul. We kind of research ahead, so we kind of know what we're walking into, but there we're listed about between 30 and 40 shops. It's ridiculous. Plus the ones we found that weren't listed, you just walk around the corner, records, walk around the corner, more records, walk around the corner, records. It's just ridiculous. I'm not going to go through all of them. I'm just going to highlight a few on the European side. The one that...
Explain that.
So the city of Istanbul is split into two parts. And on one side is Asia. You get a boat across, 10 minutes. And the other side is Europe. You go across the Bosphorus, which is the big stretch of water through the middle of town.
So technically, the land you're standing on goes from Europe to Asia.
Yeah. So you can have your breakfast in Europe and your lunch in Asia, which is what we did, in fact. So the first shop on the European side, this is the one that most people seem to like and talk about, is called Contraplaque. Quite a big size. You had a good selection of pretty much everything, as often the case when you find a good shop. There's a lot of Western stuff. There was a lot of Turkish stuff. One of the only places that had 12-inch singles and a copy of No Parlay.
so you were right at home.
Yeah. Do you know what? It was a little bit overpriced and we didn't buy anything in there, but it was interesting to have a look round. The next one, Opus 3A, which is a huge place selling predominantly new records. I think it might have been exclusively new records. Now, we've had this discussion in the past. Usually I turn my nose up.
You do, straight away.
But they had such an amazing collection of stuff. And the guy in there, and I said, I'm after this, an album by a local band, Turkish synth pop called Jacuzzi. All right. And he went straight to the section, pulled out both of them. And I was like, perfect. It is pretty obscure. They weren't even released in Turkey. They're only released in Germany.
But so these must have been reissues.
No, they're new.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I asked him about some obscure Turkish artists, whether they'd been repressed and stuff. And he went straight to another bit. He pulled out some 7-inches of the weird Turkish funk and stuff. He was a really nice fella. He said, okay, so if you like this, listen to this. And he was playing stuff in the shop while we were looking around. He found some Madonna stuff for Catherine, which we had not seen before. And yeah, absolutely brilliant.
What were his prices like?
Very good. A little bit less than the UK. Turkish lira is not worth as much and records were significantly cheaper. But from there, we found our best haul, a place called Defor Music. I think he's Turkish and she's German for the couple. I think that's how it works. They had so many like 80s, 90s rock and pop 12 inches and albums. A huge load of dance stuff. Really interesting. I managed to find the best of Depeche Mode, near mint condition, £30. Now, I never bought it when it came out because I already had everything on it. And the longer I left it, the value, it's obviously it's been reissued now, but the original just kept ticking up and up and up and up.
Is that the one with the black cover with the kind of numbers?
No, it's got a very pale cover. It just says Best Depeche Mode Volume 1. It's like almost white.
Oh, I don't think I even know.
You've probably not even seen a copy because it's quite rare. I think now it goes for, I don't know, between 70 and 100.
So when is that from?
2000 maybe? Well, I don't know. I didn't buy it because I had no interest in owning album or LP versions of tracks I already owned. But then as you've, I finished I my collection...
Say, yeah, you've changed.
I just wanted to complete it, but I wasn't paying £80. So to get it for £30, I found a Depeche coloured vinyl, which I didn't have, and I haggled him down to, I think it was a tenner, which is ridiculous.
Well, if it's a Depeche Mode coloured 12-inch that you don't have, then it's probably pretty rare.
Yeah. We bought a big pile of stuff in there, a lot of 80s stuff, some dance stuff. Catherine found some stuff.
And did you say that most places didn't have many 12-inches?
No, hardly any. It just wasn't, I don't think it was a massive thing. Anyway, we spent about 1,000 Turkish lira, which was just over £100, I think it was. It was crazy.
So still not much. If you got a big haul.
Oh, yeah. Because we haggled down as well. So, yeah, we did really well. I was absolutely made up coming out of there.
So it sounds like that's your sort of top recommendation.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you went to Asia.
I went to Asia. Here you have, I'm only going to talk about one shop there. There are shops everywhere. As you walk around the corner, you'll find just like a shop selling clothes. And in the window, you'll see boxes and boxes of records.
But more than in most European countries.
Yeah, absolutely. Their boxes of repressed, what we would call repressed tap, but it's not because it's repressed local.
Weird local Turkish records.
Yeah, and I was picking them up for like £8 or £9 each and then bringing them home as gifts. In fact, you were the recipient of one.
Fantastic. The one that you gave to me, that's a great price. That was under a tenner, new. Blimey.
They had loads of them. Who knows where they could have fallen off the back of a lorry, you don't know. But Rainbow 45 was the main, what I would call the main shop that side. Very serious shop, full of very serious looking Beatles, Led Zeppelin, Queen.
So it was a beard paradise.
It was a beard paradise, audiophile, Japanese, very stern looking gentleman working behind the counter.
So you would say sort of plus, 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 A, star, 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 plus,
it's
plus.
It's exactly the kind of, the people shopping in there would
they'd
definitely
be all over hot stampers.
However, because they had their eye on their
beard ball,
deluxe beard, there was a Depeche Mode album and had the poster in it. You never find it with the poster in it. And he had it priced without the poster. So I think it gave him a tenner. Good, hard finding one of those, maybe 50, 60, 70 quid with Minty with the poster.
There seems to be a thing with pop music, which I would consider Depeche Mode to be pop music, Madonna to be pop music.
Yep.
There's something about cult pop bands and having the poster still, because it is pop music, people would put, it's not like beard music where the poster stays carefully in the sleeve. A teenager buys it in 1987, puts the poster up on the wall. And so it seems like Kylie, Madonna, Depeche Mode, maybe Bowie, but he's a bit different again. It's having that poster seems to triple the value of a lot of these records. That's in general, that's quite a nice tip, I think, for listeners who are kind of digging, to think if you find a 12-inch by a pop artist in a charity shop and you think it's the kind of artist that might still have a bit of appeal and there's a poster in it,
oh yeah,
don't
for
overlook
sure.
it.
Yeah, Madonna in particular, some of the poster ones go for, like, you know,
like 12, 100 quid.
100, over 100 quid without
three. Yeah, 3 quid, yeah.
So
just a little extra tip there, that's all.
We also managed to go to the Ferrokoi flea market, which is absolutely huge.
I like a European flea market.
Yes, you'd love this. There was a lot of Turkish records there. Now, we only had a very limited knowledge of them, and it looked like they had been
rinsed,
yep. Mm. There was a father and son who had a box of European 12 inches, which they had no clue what they were. I managed to pick out some really good bargains. Loads of tapes. We bought loads and loads and loads.
What was the per tape price? There was a big bundle you found and they were like 30p each or something?
33p, three for a pound or something. It was just crazy.
And interesting tape, like 90s albums and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like Suede and things like that. It was bonkers. And Carter, that we got for 30p and stuff. It's just ridiculous. There was one guy at the flea market who had like Nick Cave albums and stuff like this, really high-end European.
But he knew what they were
and he was absolutely ripping the arse out of the price. So although we looked through them, we didn't buy anything off him. Pointless. A, you're at a bloody flea market, and B, you're trying to charge, you know, top end.
It's funny that you say that. I know what you mean, sort of, you're at a flea market, but the record shop that I run with my partner, we did start by selling records at boot fairs and selling them for what we thought might be over the odds, because we thought surely anyone is going to turn their nose up at paying more. This is going back 8 or 9 years. People are going to turn their nose up at anything more than a quid, right, or anything more than 2 quid. And actually, if you price it right, even if right equals 20 quid, we found that stuff sold really easily, even at a boot fair. So it's, I know that's not what you're saying, but it's just an interesting aside that actually that was our kind of route in, was being really amazed that we thought, we'll go through, we'll price them up, we'll chance around, but people aren't going to pay what we consider to be a proper price for these records. But they did. And look where I am now.
Indeed.
I'm doing a podcast with you,
yeah,
Paul.
Yeah, I know.
I did it.
There are some issues with record shopping in Istanbul.
Oh.
Primarily that, and I have managed to flag them, but Google don't always believe you. Businesses has closed. I think there were 1, 2, maybe 5 shops that were closed, compensated by ones that weren't or weren't on the map yet. The other issue is lots of them, you go inside, it's a tiny shop with a bloke in a funny hat with four small boxes of jazz. You've got no way of knowing before you get there. But you can't, you're walking around them for the most part. But there was a lot of that. Really, just, I don't know how they make any money. It just feels like maybe they're retired and they can just sit there all day drinking coffee and smoking fags and listening to jazz.
Oh, that sounds good, doesn't it? I wouldn't have the fags, but I do. When I've got, so for example, we were in Portugal not that long ago, and then most of the record shops that were on Google, again, actually seemed to be closed. And they were quite coy about putting their opening hours. And I did wonder if it might be something about European shop fronts, that a lot of them will have shutters, probably more so than in this country, quite a lot more so than in this country. I don't think it's very easy to tell, is this shop closed down or is it just closed?
No, these were ones where some of them I managed to photograph and send the photos off to Google to get them verified as shut.
But how did you know?
Because I could peer in the window and see there was, A, no records in there.
Fine. Yep, all right.
The other slight issue is we had this problem in Sofia, but you get there, you followed Google Maps, but there's nothing there. You can't find it. One, we got completely lost and we asked a guy to help us and he eventually found a buzzer in a doorway and it was in a guy's flat. Another one, we got there and I rang the phone number and a guy leaned out of his flat window and started waving at us because that's where the shop was. A couple of others were so buried inside what we would call, you know, like a market with multiple vendors.
Mm-hmm.
With, imagine one on a massive scale across many, many floors. And you all stood outside and you're like, oh. And it took us quite a while to acclimatise the fact that you have to go in, walk for Munich, go up the stairs, round the back, look, and then eventually you find this little kind of shop full of records.
Didn't even say what floor it was on.
Oh, no. But those were the best ones. That's what we found. Like, I found because we've been searching everywhere for a Mute Records Turkish pressing. And on the last day...
Did you find one?
Yeah, we found one, a Yazoo record. In beautiful condition. I think it was £6 or £5, not a lot. Found a few. We were hunting around to try and get some local music.
Did it seem different to the British pressing?
Yeah, it was very, very different.
That's fantastic.
It looked much older than it was, some spelling mistakes. But it was an officially licensed product, I believe.
Yes. Mute, if you're listening, as far as you know it was, don't go and shut down this shop. But was it matte cardstock?
Yeah, it kind of had like a big address printed from Istanbul, but actually printed into the artwork on the back with the official artwork there, but they'd added bits.
Brilliant.
And the labels looked like out of the 50s.
Oh, fantastic.
It was really, yeah, that was my favourite find. It was bizarre.
I was valuing up I think, Bulgarian pressing of Imagine by John Lennon yesterday. And it's got that kind of very dry, matte, thin cardstock cover. And the label looks like it's somewhere out of the 50s. And I was thinking, wow, so this must be an original. Because I think that record is from about 1971, I think, Imagine is from. So I was trying to figure out when it's from. And then I finally found that version, 1990.
Yep.
The 90s, Paul, that was from.
The other slight issue out there, because everyone is looking for the weird Turkish psych, prog,
rightly so,
funk, incredibly expensive. All the bits that I'd kind of annotated that I'd been, you know, mildly interested in, when I asked about them in shops, I got a wry smile or, hold up, yep, no problem, €500, no problem, €300. You know, it was so... They pretty much knew every... Even the nastiest-looking shop knew pretty much the value of everything.
I suppose it would be like going to Germany and asking for Kraftwerk, Cannes, Neu, Amondul.
Exactly.
And they'd be like, yeah, all right, mate. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all here. They're all a euro each. Help yourself.
Yeah, I know. But I was kind of hoping, even if they'd been repressed and stuff, and for the most part, they were like, nope. Couldn't find them. I did find a few bits. I said I got a couple of repressed sevens. I bought some repressed albums. I even bought a couple of CDs. However, they don't check the price of CDs and tapes because the, I can't remember his name, Erdogan, something or other, this guy, really kind of really funky Turkish music from the 70s. I think I paid 50p for the CD. Looked on Discogs, like £14. Quite a lot of that. All the tapes were 30p. Well, I can tell you now, if you've got 90s original tapes, even though they might be foreign, they're worth more than 30 pence.
Although you've still got to sell them.
Yes, we don't think we're going to keep them all because they're just good fun.
So overall, it sounds like you'd recommend it. How was the city?
The city itself is amazing. It's really cheap. It's busy until, you know, we were like walking down the main drag at 1 o'clock in the morning. It was the equivalent of Oxford Street on Saturday afternoon. Everywhere is bustling and busy and bright and alive and
friendly,
super friendly, insanely cheap.
Brilliant.
You can live like a king. Our Airbnb was a 2-minute walk from palatial hotels with chandeliers hanging from them. The price differential between those two would have been astonishing. And yeah, you're there. You're right in the middle of town. You could walk. We could walk to everything, see everything. It's very... There ain't a lot of old buildings and monuments unless you like churches, which is good for us because we don't. But if you like shops, record shops, bars,
and
food...
And eating, yeah, then you're laughing.
You're laughing.
So
I couldn't think
give
of
it
a
what,
better
like
place.
Five pluses, quadruple A, yep.
Star. Yeah, a wow. White hot stamper.
Of a city.
Yes.
Paul, we end, as we often do, with a silly quiz. How does that strike you?
I'm looking forward to this because I kind of know what it's about, but I genuinely have no clue as to any of the answers.
So I think, was it in our last episode, previous episode,
yeah.
we talked about a white label LP auction held in support of National Album Day. Did you honour National Album Day? Did you wear your album poppy, Paul?
I didn't wear my album poppy, but I did play... I can't remember what I played. Now,
did
I think
you play an album?
I played a nice Start Counting album, which plays at 45.
Oh, well, that so doesn't just, count.
It does count.
No, it doesn't.
It does count.
It has to be 33 RPM, or it doesn't count. So, listeners that are joining us late, this auction on a popular auction site, not eBay, was of about 150-odd white labels of albums, so possibly test pressings, possibly just white labels. There was a bit of discussion on the Twitter about whether a white label is a test pressing. Anyway, some of them were signed, some of them were not signed. There was a range of pop artists and heritage acts there.
Oh, God.
And they were almost all of them, 99% of them were from the last couple of years. So whether or not they were old 60s, 70s, 80s acts or contemporary acts, these are all white labels of new issues, right? So Paul, here's your challenge. But we said last time we were going to find out what yep. kind of prices things went for.
Well, one of them I thought the Ed Sheeran one would go for thousands, so I'm about to find out if I'm right or wrong.
Paul, the Ed Sheeran...
Oh, God, go on.
Number Six Collaborations Project, 2019 double album, signed by Ed himself. The estimate was £80 to £100,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to tell you what it sold for.
Oh.
To set the quiz up. Don't panic.
Okay.
It sold for £280. Possibly a lot less than you would
think.
It's less than I
thought. Yeah.
Here's the game. I'm going to give you more, and for each one, all you got to do is tell me if you think it's sold for higher or lower than the one we've just heard.
Okay.
So, Ed Sheeran sold for £280. David Bowie.
Mm-hmm.
His self-titled debut 1967 album, and this was the 2018 Record Store Day reissue of that album.
Yep.
Do you think that went for higher or lower than Ed Sheeran?
It's higher than Ed.
You're wrong.
No.
It sold for £140. It sold for half what Ed Sheeran sold for.
I'm shocked. I thought there'd be mad Bowie fans who'd buy anything. Blimey.
So there's weirdness on this
list. Oh, okay.
So that's wrong, number one. Kylie Minogue.
Right.
Step Back in Time, the definitive collection, two-disc 2019 compilation. Did that go for higher or lower? And obviously, listeners, please do play along at home. See if you can beat Paul.
I'm going to say higher.
You're right. It sold for £500.
Aha! Okay,
Oasis,
that's
Paul.
Oh.
Definitely Maybe, 2019 reissue of mm-hmm. their 1994 debut album across two discs. And by the way, none of these are signed unless I say so.
Okay.
So not signed. Did that go for higher or lower than Kylie?
I'm going to say lower.
I'm afraid it went higher.
Oh, God.
That sold for £600. Again, just to remind you, Bowie, £140. Oasis reissue, £600. Let's see if you can get this one. The Fun-Loving Criminals, Paul.
Right.
One of your favourites. 100% Colombian, which is the album that doesn't even have Scooby Snacks on it.
Right.
The 2018 reissue. Did that go for higher or lower than Oasis? Definitely Maybe.
Lower.
Correct. It went for £55.
Yes, that's
yeah,
more
I know,
like
much
it.
Much more like it, isn't it? What's that word? Schadenfreude? Definitely a little bit of that. Right. Next, Howard Jones.
Oh.
Two albums, Dream Into Action and Humans Lib.
Mm-hmm.
So a bundle of two. They're both 2018 reissues. Did they go for higher or lower than the Fun-Loving Criminals?
Oh, they must have gone for more than that. It must be higher.
We're saying higher?
Yep.
You're right, and you'll be surprised by how much. They sold to an insane Howard Jones fan for £420.
Yes. Go on, Howard.
Because you're in the pro Howard camp, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought you were. I thought you'd be happy about that. Here's a good one then. Underworld.
Oh.
Second toughest in the Infants album, the 2015 white label of the reissue of their 1996 album. Higher or lower than Howard Jones?
Probably lower.
It was lower. £65.
Oh, that's actually pretty good. Yeah, I think that's a steal.
Really weird. It's odd, isn't
it? So weird.
Okay, Craig David.
Ah.
Born to Do It.
Right.
Now, this is an acetate of a reissue of his double album from the year 2000. So it's an acetate of a reissue. Did that go for higher or lower than £65
would
Underworld?
A Craig David fan know what an acetate is the first question.
What do you know is acetate from his elbow? That's what you're wondering.
I think it went for more.
It went for £30.
No!
Poor Craig.
Poor Craig.
Poor Craig. You're not doing that well. You've got 4 out of 7, but you know, you can win it back. Here we go. This should be a slam dunk, Paul.
Right.
Did the white label of the 50th anniversary reissue of the Beatles' Abbey Road sell for more or less than Craig David Born to Do It? Come on, Paul.
Well, clearly more. I want to say less, but it was definitely more.
It sold for £850.
Is that the highest?
It would be spoiling it to tell you, wouldn't it? Okay, the penultimate question. You've got 5. That's a perfectly respectable score. I think it's beatable. I think there'll be people out there who've beaten you. But the Arctic Monkeys.
Ah. Oh.
Their most recent album, Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino, from last year.
Okay.
Did that go for higher or lower than the Beatles' Abbey Road?
Well, it's their latest album, you say. So this is actually a test pressing of an actual release.
I believe so.
I think it went for over £1,000.
It went for over £1,000. It went for £1,300. And that was certainly one of, if not the highest sale. And finishing off, so you got that one right. Well done. George Michael.
Oh.
Faith, original 1990 test pressing.
Oh, right.
Original 1990 test pressing.
Yep.
I mean, I've slightly spoiled the ending by saying that the Arctic Monkeys was one of the highest, if not the highest ones. But do you think it went for higher or lower than that? Fuck! Quizmasters make it look really easy, but it's not easy, no. Paul.
Well, I'm going to say that went for about £900.
It went for £620, okay. Which is actually less than I think it should have done.
Yeah, only because you spoiled it, I was going to go higher.
The original 1990 test pressing of Faith by George Michael...
I think you've got to.
Lots of surprises on that.
If you looked under the hood into that auction and how much pushing the actual artists did themselves as well, would it be a factor?
Oh, to their street teams and their fan clubs.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Howard Jones fan club out in force.
Oh, they would have been all over that like a cheap suit.
That was pretty good, wasn't it?
Yes, very good, Tim. I don't often get to do the quiz. I usually write the quiz. It's not easy, is it?
And it's not easy. I tried to pick a mixture of sort of pop and heritage acts to give you a fair chance. So I put in Underworld and Craig David Jones.
If any of the listeners got all of them right, we'll be hats. Off.
I mean, if you could flip a coin and you could potentially get that right, because a lot of it, to be honest, seems really random to me. And as you say, how much of that is hashtag online street team action getting there.
Please don't say hashtag, Tim.
I'm so sorry. Evidently, the fun-loving criminals failed to activate their base, didn't they? Oh,
I've got a fun-loving criminals CD.
Do you?
The one with the Scooby snacks on it, yeah.
Why would anyone want to bid on the one that hasn't got Scooby snacks on it?
I don't know.
Hubie, if you're listening, we love you. We love your band.
Yes.
Well done.
If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us at We Buy Records Pod on Twitter and at WeBuyRecordsPod@gmail.com on email. I did see you ask a load of questions that people replied to, and now you're just going to completely ignore them, aren't you?
Yes.
Excellent.
Well, they've given us some good fodder for future things.
Perfect.
But it was a lot of just inane Twitter rubbish, to be honest.
We can't afford to be rude to our listeners, Tim.
It was really good what they put.
Excellent. Join us next time on We
Buy
Records.
Thanks very much. Bye. And
I've just realised.
Yes.
You can't.
Can we really not?
No, you can't say that word.
Can
because,
you really
no,
not?
No, because we'll get like, Spotify
it.
And stuff won't.
Oh. All right. Well, so.
You can just beep it out. You've got to remember
right,
to
I
beep
will,
it out.
I will bleep it
because
out.
Because only you
I,
said
I
it.
I will bleep. I'll bleep it out. I'll bleep it out.
And you can. And now you've got your bit for the end.
Yeah. All right.
Sorry.
So I'm going to bleep out the word.
Yes. Don't beep out the word.
Brilliant. Perfect. I'll do that. Thanks, Paul.